And we're back once again, only on It's Last Call. Last Call with the alcohol, only on lastcallpodcast.com. And joining me here on location, this man here, well, he is the expert in all things Texas football. Well, he's excited about not just this past Mother's Day, which he spent a lovely time with his family, but also the draft, preseason, free agency. And he's already predicting both teams are making the playoffs again. I give you once again, all the way from Into the Lab podcast, I give you it's Ernest Silva. So, Ernest, let's start off here with your Texans. You were peacocking at the end of the season going, hey, we're starting something here. So now the draft is done. Now that free agency is done, are you still peacocking? Or is there a part where like, okay, in D'Amico I trust, but I'm starting to get a little bit nervous about this defense and offense.
I'm not nervous at all. Matter of fact, I'm peacocking even more. AFC Championship this year. I'm already calling it.
All right. So let's start with the good news. What did you like about free agency and the draft for the Houston Texans?
Oof. Free agency. I really enjoyed watching D'Amico form his team and not give in to big contracts. I think Houston played it very safe with the star talent that they got. I think adding Hunter, adding other players to the mix, to their already established core, was phenomenal. D'Amico's defense is just going to get better. And then I think through the draft, the Texans just got deeper. I think their big splashes this offseason are going to come on the names of Joe Mixon and Stephon Diggs. I think that's going to be that's the flashy, put them over the top, veteran leadership, playoff presence. If you know my show in the Into the Lab podcast, you know that we are Mixon truthers on that show. And where Joe Mixon goes, so does success. And so that to me is the biggest splash of the offseason is Joe Mixon.
So let's talk about Joe Mixon. There should be worry because when a playoff team trades away a running back, that's usually a sign of like, okay, what's wrong? What don't we know about? Why are you getting rid of this guy when it's for Bengals like Super Bowl or bust? So what should the Texans be worried about with Mixon? Because it's basically a seventh round pick they got him for, which means Cincinnati was quick to dump this guy.
Yeah, well, Mixon was unhappy. Mixon was unhappy and T. Higgins is unhappy and I'm sorry, Tyler Boyd's unhappy and there's a lot of unhappiness. Star defensive player, star offensive lineman, not happy. I think the Cincinnati Bengals have a culture problem when it came to the turning of the tide. Joe Burrow's team, Burrow Chase, is that going to be the cornerstones to lead them to a championship? They got close. So is this the team that's going to do it? I don't know. I don't know. And for Joe Mixon, he's not getting any younger. For running backs, I know that can seem scary. But you have a young running back in Damian Pierce already there in Houston. That is a focal point to that offense at one point before the CJ Proud era. And maybe Mixon comes on and mentors a bit while leading and carries, while doing what he does best, which is pulse an offense and keep it balanced. If you haven't watched Joe Mixon in recent years, he gets used on everything. If Austin Eckler wasn't in the league, you'd be saying that's what Joe Mixon does because he catches the ball. Roughly 15% of the time he's on the field, he's utilized in the rushing game, 1,000-yard rusher. I mean, he does everything. So I love Joe Mixon. I love Joe Mixon fantasy. I love Joe Mixon, the player and the person. If you listen to his quotes, he's a team guy. I think it's great. I just think with age, with his need to win now, I don't know if Cincinnati's in a position to win this year. And I think that might be a testament as to why he wanted to leave and why Houston's the best fit.
Stephon Diggs is now a Houston Texan. That could be a good thing. That could be a bad thing. It all depends on is Stephon Diggs sort of in a good mood. how much is this a challenge to CJ Stroud, a.k.a. CJ Proud, as you call him? Because last year, everybody's in love. Wide receivers, the quarterback, the tight end. They're all in love. They're all getting along. And now we have a diva who loves to peacock and loves to get the ball. He really loves to get the ball. So how does Stroud handle this? And is he confident enough to tell Diggs, no, just shut the hell up and, get open. Then I'll give you the ball.
I think you'll see what happens with CJ Proud in years 2 and 3. Quarterbacks at this level, they usually start to advance and you start seeing how good they really are. They take their game to the next level, call it the sophomore jump, the third year jump, and you really start to see how great they actually are. They start learning a little bit more complications with the playbook. They start audibling themselves. The game really slows down. And I think for CJ Proud, it started at towards the end of last year to really slow down for him. You saw how good he got. And that's going to be great when they start to open up the playbooks even more, and they start to make sure that he is well defined within this offense. Honestly, I think he was already starting to use some of his audibility towards the end of the year, and he was really flexing his cannon all over the field. I think we're going to see more of that. I think we're going to lean a little bit more into CJ Proud going into next season. I think he makes the jump. There's a lot of quarterbacks who get shaky, who can't learn the complexity of the playbook, get those audibles in. That to me is not going to be what happens with CJ Proud. I know I'm a homer, but I called it last year. I said he was going to be the offensive rookie of the year. Didn't quite call him being MVP candidate for a bit of it, but I knew he was going to do well in Houston. So excited to see them build and give him a chance so early on. These first 4 years as a quarterback, where the cap room is very flexible. These are the years to do it before it gets a little complicated. So go and do it with the probably going to be one of the most talented rosters he's going to have in his career.
Let's talk about the defense, because that was something, it's almost like they've rejiggered the whole thing. And should there be concern on the plus side, they brought in Danielle Hunter, who, hey, he is pretty damn good. He's pass rushing, defensive end. He should help Will Anderson. That's not a problem. On the other end, they lost a lot of their defensive line. And I know your pro Texas, like, oh, can't criticize them, but are you looking at going, okay, wait a minute here. We lost Malik Collins to Cincinnati. We lost Grinner to Minnesota. We lost Sheldon Rankins to, sorry, we lost Malik Collins to San Francisco. Sheldon Rankins to Cincinnati. Starting to get worried here. Like, who's going to stop the run? Who's going to get the pass rusher? We're just getting, like, nothing up the middle and going, okay, let's just hope we get to the edge.
Honestly, it's bodies. I think you're just saying basically at this point there's a bunch of tackles that need to be made. There's gonna be next man up. I think Danielle Hunter brings in a whole new caliber of leadership to the defense, but Will Anderson Jr. proved himself to be Pro Bowl status already. I loved how well they fit the scheme and how it just boosted to a whole nother level under the D'Amico Ryan system as Will Anderson got comfortable. I'm not as worried. There's a lot of money still that the Texans have. There's a lot of trades that can still happen between now and then. You've heard the Lattimore rumors coming from New Orleans to Houston. You've heard some other big names. Cincinnati may be sending another defensive guy to Houston. We'll have to see if maybe that ends up being a swap. But all in all, there's still a lot of offseason left. I wouldn't be surprised if they have a couple of names start floating Houston's way, considering they still have a bunch of money left in the cap. What are they saving that for? It's not on the offensive side. It's going to be on the defensive side, and maybe there's going to be some unhappy campers that are going to come available, and then you just start filling up that roster. But that roster is deeply talented in the secondary and deeply talented overall, special teams, defense, and offense-wise. This is one of the teams to beat. This is going to be a team on everybody's radar next year.
Which I get, but it's still, but it'd be like, these are your defensive tackles right now. It's going to be Tim Settle, Folu Fatukasi. You've got Khalil Davis, McTelvin Akeem. I mean, none of these guys, like, okay, they've started more than like one or two games. A couple of them got cut. And I get it. Look, you're talking trade here, but you and I both know if you have a good defensive tackle, you're asking, you're not trading him unless you're getting like multiple first round picks and like a player like Chris Jones ain't getting traded anytime soon here.
Right, but you're going to have teams who have cap situations. So the deal in Cincinnati is it's a contract issue. So the deal with Lattimore in New Orleans is a contract issue. You're going to have a lot of veterans on contract issues. And you're going to have defensive tackles who may or may not be in their prime of their career, but are going to have a lot of experience that are still available in free agency. I'm sure if I pop the list open, there might not be fancy names, but you really need somebody to plug up that middle and add some experience. To me, the middle piece, between the A gaps, you're gonna have a big body. If you can find some big bodies to fill that, and you can move them, in and out, that's all you really need. I expect Houston to build up next man up. You don't recognize the names now. Settle had some flashy moments last year, but you're gonna have people who are gonna be featured now, right? Like before Malik Collins was Malik Collins, he was nobody. And you're gonna start hearing those names more and more. Even Grenard from last year was a nobody that turned into a Pro Bowler, and now he gets a lucrative multi-year deal to go play football in Minnesota. So that to me is what Houston's gonna present. Some no names at positions, and then they're gonna come out and be somebody's.
What would you have done if you had, if you could have done it all over again? And it was, they said, hey, all right, you know what? You can either sign Danielle Hunter, and I'm looking here, Azeez Alshary, both guys a bit older, or you can keep Grenard and you can keep Sheldon Rankins and Malik Collins. What would you have done? I mean, you, Ernest Sylvan, put you in the GM. Is this worth it, or are you looking at this going, okay, well, we got a bit older, but we get better?
Yeah, if I'm critiquing and I'm the GM, I gotta trust that Cesario knows that I don't. But if I had inside information that any of the defensive tackles at the top were available for Houston and already didn't have respective teams they were going to, I mean, maybe I'm taking a swing at somebody like Arik Armstead, who ended up signing with, I believe he signed with the Jaguars, or a Leonard Williams, somebody who's not going to break my bank too much and still give me flexibility. And then bring in Pro Bowl level talent. But I don't know if you if I don't know if Nick Cesario really thought he would have still close to 20 million in cap at this point. I thought they were very cautious with their money, which is good because then you can afford bigger names, like the Stephon Gilmores, who are still floating out there, not doing anything yet, waiting for their respective teams to give them the right deal. And I think they're in a position where if those free agency promises fall out, they're the driver's seat, right? Houston's the team to be, to be the place to be right now, the team to beat. Like that is, other than the Chiefs, of course, that is where people are going to want to go. And you have CJ Proud, who is the prominent quarterback. I just think that they're going to be a healthy landing spot for a lot of teams for the next couple of years at least. So there might be better options, but I would never have paid what they were paying for Chris Jones and other big name defensive tackles. Reader, probably not my risky contract. I would have brought in just to fill that middle with talent. I would have put bodies, mouth breathers to fill the A gaps, and then the talent on the sides.
So let's talk about the draft. It was, well, they did a lot of move. They moved a lot of pieces. They traded down from the first round, picked up a second and a sixth, and next year's second from Buff. But they traded to Buffalo to get Stephon Diggs. All right, it's fine. Kamil Lassiter, Blake Fisher, Kalen Bullock, Cade Stover are the save of guys that are the big draft picks here. Is it how is this like a good draft, or is it like, well, we're not gonna take risks, we're gonna play steady Eddie. These are depth pieces and no like big swings, and like, all right, well, let's try getting off the tackle. Let's try to get, like a top-tier safety. I mean, how much would you look at this draft go, it's nice. It's not sexy, but it's nice.
Yeah, definitely not the sexiest draft, but it did fill some needs, right? You saw them go position. They stacked the line with some depth, some great candidates at line where they were picked. I love the Blake Fisher pick at offensive tackle. Notre Dame always produces talent. I'm a Zach Martin fan, so I'm always big about Notre Dame tackles and guards that come out. But I think some of the there were some home runs. I'll talk about two of them. Kamari Lassiter. The defensive back from Georgia. You come from a winning program. You come from a program as a key staple in that backfield. Just an island, really. And I love the attitude. I love the drama. So give me Lassiter all day on a Georgia Bulldog team that had nothing but attitude. And then I think Cade Stover, alongside what is already a talented group of receivers, Blake Stover comes in, who is. You could be labeling him as probably some of the best hands coming out of college. I absolutely love the overall talent from that tight end. It wasn't a need, right? You have a tight end already settled there, the former Cowboy playing in Houston. And you have now you bring in Stover, who's going to learn and then also take his game to the next level as he grows in that system. I think those are the two home run picks. I think we'll hear about them for years to come. The rest of them, maybe it's the exclusion of Fisher and maybe Bullock at a small extent. I think the rest of them is really kind of filler positions. Fill up the training camp, see what you have there. Is there potential to grow in the next couple of years, have them be rotation pieces and roster pieces for years to come? And maybe you get a home run, maybe you get a home run somewhere down there, right? Maybe some of these later picks come out. But the Will Anderson trade from last year is what caused them to be out of the first round, right? Expected they're gonna have some repercussions from that. But here we are. And the Texans in year two under Cesario's full leadership at the helm of the draft picks are to me still in the driver's seat. I gave them about a BB plus, just depending on how some of the lower picks pan out if they make the roster. So we'll see. But this is definitely a filler draft.
So you mentioned Blake Fisher. They had a chance to take two of the tackles, both guys I know you talked about before the draft. One, Kingsley Sumataya, all the way from BYU. He went number 63 to Kansas City Chiefs. And Houston's own, University of Houston's, Patrick Paul, who went 55 to Miami Dolphins. How much is that a risk? Because, when people talk about Blake Fisher, he's steady. It's not, he's a huge athlete, but he's, solid left tackle. Is it worth it? Or should they have gone for, these massive guys like Patrick Paul, Kingsley Sumataya, who are the new brand of offensive tackles? Big, fast, look like they can, basically bench press a truck.
I think Fisher fits the scheme more with a back like Joe Mixon and then being able to get around the edge for Stroud. I'm not saying he's perfect, but it's similar to the conversation argument of Ohio State and quarterbacks. Offensive linemen in Notre Dame are on the opposite end. They've trained well. They have a great strength and conditioning coach. They come from a program that values the ground and pound and the running game. Bring in somebody like Joe Mixon. You're going to want somebody smart and savvy, somebody who comes from a system that's big about the run. I like that coming from Notre Dame. And Blake Fisher is no slouch. I think he's a little overshadowed by his peer, who's a lottery pick. But I think that he's definitely going to need some work around hands. He's going to need some work on some of his style of play. But I'm okay with the pick. Honestly, if you're homegrown there in Houston and you're not picked by a Houston team, might be some insider knowledge that that's probably not going to pan out the way we should. So you'll want to keep eyes on that. And then maybe just close to the program. I'm not sure on the recruiting staff who exactly looks at the offensive lineman like I do with the Cowboys. But they obviously knew that was a guy they wanted to go with. And so they went Fisher the whole way. I like the pick. I'm a Notre Dame fan for offensive linemen, so all day.
We have, let's see, we're going to move over to the team that everybody can't stop talking about, even when they're good or bad. They are America's team, for better or worse, the Dallas Cowboys. And, well, the good news is Zeke Elliott's back. That's good news. I know that, even secretly, you're like, breaking out the Zeke Elliott jersey, the little jersey for your son. Go, okay, Zeke is back. Give him a bro hug. Say, hey, it was Jerry, not us. We never stopped believing. The bad news is they lost a lot of players here.
They did.
Tyrone Smith, Michael Gallup, Tony Pollard, Neville Gallimore, Jonathan Hankins, possibly Stephen Gilmore, but he's still a free agent. Tyler Biadasz. I mean, they're all gone. So is it time to panic if you're a Cowboys fan? It's like, okay, what's going on here? I'm getting worried. When Jerry, do you know the season has started? Preseason? Like, the offseason, did you know it started or what's going on here?
There was two ways the offseason could go for the Cowboys. It was either one, we bring back the exact same team, we run it back, maybe add some talent here and there, and do whatever we can to make the Dak's contract extension work for us and make sure that money that's available goes to the right players. There was a lot of ways. That was one way. That was one of the two ways. There was a lot of different ways of maneuvering contracts and maneuvering the money and the cap to bring back everybody. It would have financially strained you for a couple of years, and that would have been just your team, and that's it. That's your run. Or you don't believe in what we have, and there's a mistake happening here, whether it's Dak's current extension that he's on for his final year, or it's hiring Mike McCarthy, or it's just a lack of belief in the system itself, and it needs a huge reset. And I think the Cowboys chose the latter. And that's a tough thing to do if you're Jerry Jones. There's just no money. The Cowboys just have no money. Dak's contract eats up a lot of it. CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons and a lot of the stars eat up a lot of this contract, and we have to have new deals with them. And that is why the Cowboys could not move. It's why they couldn't go after a star back. It's why they waited for two specific backs in this draft. We talked about Jonathan Brooks. They wanted him, and it didn't fall. And so now you're bringing back Dak's best friend for a season that, if it does not go well, he is going to need his best friend on that team. I really think that's why Zeke is back, because it's comfort for Dak back there for all of his seasons that he's been a Cowboy. And you bring back familiarity. Zeke knows the system. And I don't think they are all in for this season like they claim to be. I do think they're a good team. I think the Cowboys brought back some pieces. They have a couple roster spots they still need to address, but Stephon Gilmore's already said he's coming back to Dallas. It's just a matter of money. And so you're going to bring back Gilmore, and the defensive secondary is going to be one of the top talents. The linebacker group is one of the top talents. Overshown and Micah Parsons by themselves are just next level. I guess we'll see Overshown really during the regular season, because we didn't get to last season. We'll see how he comes back from injury. You lost a lot of key pieces, 17 pieces to be exact. The line is better than ever. The line's very talented. Yes, you lost Tyron Smith, but how many games does he actually play in clutch situations? It's not many. But the real question is going to be, is can CeeDee Lamb, Cooks, some of our other receivers that are going to have to step up in the absence of Michael Gallup, in the absence of Martavis Bryant, who is not with the team anymore. But we did have some flashes of excellence. His name is escaping me for some reason. His name is escaping me. I have the wrong name in my head. But we had flashes of excellence for some of the lower receivers on the depth chart. Will they step up and fill in the void? And then continue to see the rising of Jake Ferguson. We're gonna see, right? We're gonna see all of that. And I know there's been some Najee Harris rumors coming out from Dallas in a trade situation. We're gonna have to see what Dallas does to address some of the holes and fills for the opportunities. But yes, Dallas did take a step back. It wasn't a huge step back, but it was a step back. Not all in my opinion. To me, it's a prove it year for Dak and McCarthy, with a less talented roster, with a brand new defensive coordinator, and a new head on the defense with Eric Kendricks.
So let's talk tackles. There are two tackles this year. And Tyron Smith left, which is okay. That's as you said, he's getting old. You weren't sure if he's going to be able to stay healthy forever. Now it's Terrence Steele, where they're either going to keep it right or move to left, and Tyler Guyton, who, as you said, this is the guy that you look and go, holy crap, he's a big, son of a bitch. 6 foot eight, 322 pounds, probably can bench press a truck. We've heard from other people, Price Carter, who we know is going to be doing some work with the Into the Lab podcast, that you can't just take right tackles and switch them over to left tackles. And there's other people who believe, wait a minute, he's big, he's fast, he's huge wingspan, we can move to left tackle. Do you trust Guyton to play left tackle in the pros? Or is this a guy that you look and go, he'll be a right tackle and hopefully Steele can move over to left tackle and not get, Dak Prescott killed?
I guess we'll have to see in OTAs. I really like to see Steele go to left. It'd be probably more comfort for Dak. When Smith would go down, Steele played his fair share of snaps at left tackle. It's not an easy position transition to. Price is right. That's funny. I mean, if Guyton shows he has the footwork for it and he can play it, then you put him in. And you write it. This is a make or break year for Dak. He will get frustrated and pissed off if he doesn't play the position right, though. You see a lot of prime quarterbacks, one exclusively like Aaron Rodgers, who gets pissed at any left tackle that doesn't block him, block for him. And so you'll see that from Dak this year, if Guyton can't slide in there like the Cowboys say he can. So I would expect Steele to start at left tackle and Guyton to start at right.
All right. Here's the defense for the Cowboys. As we said, we have a lot of guys left. Hey,
He
let's talk about the guy who about somebody who had to retire, Leighton Vander Esch. A lot of people thought he was basically not re-signed, cut, then he retired. What is his legacy, and how much does that hurt the Cowboys when a guy that a lot of people loved basically is like, well, just sort of see you later, and there's not that well. Let's just bring him back for a low salary, but just keep him because he is that legacy guy.
Yeah, it's tough. For some reason, this keeps trending with Cowboys. If you think about the Dat Nguyen's of the year and of the years, and then Sean Lee, Leighton Vander Esch is just going to add his name. There's even somebody else, even as of recent, who played for the Packers, who had the same type of thing where injuries just really plagued them, and they didn't really see the full extent of their potential. You saw flashes of greatness, and I mentioned him with a couple of people who our Cowboys Hall of Famers, in the Dallas Hall of Fame, with Dat Nguyen and Sean Lee. But like these guys who are leaders on the defense come in, they play hard. They're basically the heart of the defense. And the solo wolf, right? The wolf pack himself, Leighton Vander Esch gets hurt again, and has to leave. I think that's tough from a culture standpoint because you ride or die with these guys. And in the offseason, one of the top linebacker cores before training camp started were the Cowboys. I think they had a ton of talent there. Micah Parsons, Leighton Vander Esch, Marvin Overshown, right? You just had a bunch of talent at the linebacker position, and then slowly you just started picking off with injuries, and Diggs goes down for the secondary. And you just saw this Dallas defense who ended up playing phenomenal first half of the year. Kind of come back to earth the second half of the year, but you had this over talented group get dwindled, right? And now their gut is out with 10 key players gone. So we'll have to see how they respond. Next man up again, another situation where you're just kind of calling the next people up. And there's going to be more roster moves as the contract situations start to figure out and Dallas finds out where they're at, and the salary caps for all the teams continue to dwindle, and free agents don't want to pick a place to play. Dallas will be one of those spots yearly where they want to play a chance to win a championship. And Dak Prescott, probably considered a top five, top 10 quarterback to some. You play with elite quarterbacks. Only 14 get to make it a year in the playoffs. So with those odds, Dak's up there in the conversation. So you want to play for a team that has that. Dallas will still be marketable, and still be watched by everybody, despite probably regressing quite a bit.
What did you think of their draft? And then we'll start with their first four picks: offensive tackle, defensive end, guard, and linebacker. There were a lot of people who said, "Well, you need more defensive tackles. They can't stop the run. What's going on here?" Of course, Mazi Smith. I think they want to run out of town. There were people who were clamoring for, "Yeah, get a running back. Get somebody. What the hell's going on? There's nobody." And that's sort of poo-pooed here. A lot of people wanted a higher linebacker. What did you think of a draft? Were you happy? Were you sad? And how much did you look at this and go, okay, well, Steven, I trust.
It's in Steven I trust. I actually think the Cowboys had a top three draft pick, a draft day. So I love what the Cowboys did. And that's I'm taking the homer out of it. I actually love some of the needs. So Tyler Guyton, I absolutely chose for the Cowboys in multiple mock drafts. I said on my show that he would be a phenomenal pick if he's there. And if you don't have your key wide receivers from Texas or any of your guys you're targeting that don't fall from the top, Guyton's your guy. We have a connection to Sooner football. We tend to go with Oklahoma Sooner football guys, and that seems to be a trend for the Cowboys. Jerry Jones has a connection there. It was the right pick. Marshawn Nealon was Micah Parsons' pick. Him and the coaching staff were on the same page. If you saw his live feed, he said, "I messaged him Nealon all day. That's the guy you want. If he wants him in the locker room and he wants him alongside him, that's got to mean something." And so now you're going to have DeMarcus Lawrence, Micah Parsons, Marshawn Nealon there, after the loss of Dante Fowler, Dorrance Armstrong. So you're going to have to re-up that. And so I thought those two picks were perfect picks, fits the culture. Cooper Beebe was probably the slam dunk pick of the draft. I think he's a lineman that's going to fit right into the rotation and probably upgrade to a starter at one point, and be the guy that we lean on. He is you when you take culture guys, you take guys who are leaders, captains, and can fit along the line anywhere. I think Beebe does that. I'm very excited at what he does. And if you look at his numbers, I mean, he played almost 1,500 snaps and only gave up 5 sacks his entire college career. Like that's phenomenal. Like that's incredible. You want somebody like that. I think that's great. We go linebacker, we go defensive back. Flournoy's probably going to get some run to see if he can compete up there and get some playing time. And then I think the back half of the draft is just a bunch of flyers trying to make sure we can fill up the roster with players who can play. I like the first four to six picks of Dallas. I think the last two are stretch picks, so I'm not going to talk about them, but I think the four picks were just all slam dunks for Dallas to start off with.
We're gonna wrap this up with the roast of Tom Brady. You've seen it. I've seen it. It was actually pretty funny in some parts, others not.
Yeah.
Should we expect more players, or like, how much do you look and go, man? It's gonna be tough because there's not a lot of players you could see like sit there, take it, and not get pissed because most players do not like getting made fun of.
I agree. Specifically Dallas Cowboy players or Houston Texans players, or just any
Just
players?
any players in general, but you look and go, hey, you know, this could
Ooh.
work.
Yeah, I think somebody like Philip Rivers would be funny, because I heard he's a big shit talker. So I think a lot of guys would come up and talk about how lame his shit talking would be. I think that would be a fun gimmick. Maybe even the Manning brothers would be really fun to have up there, even together. Just to talk about how who's the Hall of Famer and who isn't, and have them go back and forth. I think that would be a really fun gimmick. At first, I thought this was just going to be Cowboys Texans. So my two picks for the Cowboys Texans, just to get the Homer picks out of the way. Tony Romo would be hilarious. I don't think he's very thick-skinned though, so there would be a lot of jokes made about him and some of the dumb crap he said over the years, and just his story. So I think that would be a phenomenal pick. JJ Watt, I think, is the guy though that would be phenomenal to see up there. I mean, he's comical on the field. He was comical in his last days. He's even comical now, saying he'd come back and play now, and everybody wanting him to come back and play for the Texans now that they have this stacked roster. I think he would be a phenomenal pick to go roast up there. But I think the overall fandom pick for me, I'd love to see Shannon Sharpe get on a roast. I want to see Shannon Sharpe get on stage and just get roasted by everybody for all the hot takes he makes and for all the crap he does and the different network hopping he's done and his show and then his career and the greats he's played with. Shannon Sharpe would be a fun one to have up there on stage.
Like, could he take it though? Because I was thinking about other stars like Deion Sanders, even guys like Ray Lewis. You don't want to get big, sexy names, Aaron Rodgers. Like, could they handle that? Could they go up there and go, all right, we're gonna get made fun of and not get pissed? Because there were even times when Brady was up there, it's like, all right, you can see he's just getting like, yeah, I'm
No,
giving
yeah,
both barrels back.
that's why I didn't mention them, because I don't think any of those names
Could Jerry Jones do it? Could you see
could. I
Jerry
think
Jones get
maybe
roasted
the
or?
next swaggiest person that could for modern day times. No, he can't. No way. King Jerry Jones would never. I think the next best person is probably going to be Patrick Mahomes, but that's if he surpasses Tom Brady, because then he can just lean back and tell everybody, "I'm the GOAT anyway, so shut the fuck up." That's basically what's going to end up happening.
Well, very happy, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, we're always proud to have on the show. I give you from Into the Lab Podcasts. The method behind a madness and the mind behind a brainchild here, I give you, it's Ernest Silva. So Ernest, where can fans check you out at? Where is the YouTube channel, the TV, X, Facebook? Where can fans hit you up at?
Absolutely. You can catch us on at Into the Lab Pod on most social platforms, at the Sport Gene on Twitch. And we are usually Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Central Time. Will be Tuesday tonight this week. We had flexed to Wednesdays and Thursdays just because of scheduling with some of the sports scientists. We're back to Tuesday nights. But always come on, and we're always looking for talent. If you guys want to come on and talk shop with Connor and I and Alondo and Rachel and everybody else who kind of joins us backstage, come on to the show. We appreciate y'all. And appreciate any follows.
Ernest Silva, ladies and gentlemen, once again, always on a pleasure having you on the show. We come back, a lot more going on here. Only on It's Last Call. Last Call with the Alcohol, only on the Last Call Podcast.com.